Yo, katsuo, which is welcome in Japanese. Welcome to the Daddy Unscripted podcast. My name is Tim Wheaton. I am the host and the creator of the podcast, and I'm welcoming you today in Japanese because I welcome you in a different language and say goodbye to you in a different language on every episode, because at the very least, I'm giving you that little nugget of new knowledge to expand your horizons a little bit and give you a little extra bonus nugget beyond just these conversations and the inspiration that you're going to get from them, including and absolutely including this guest on today's podcast, David Newhan, who I'm very, very, very excited. I finally was able to sit down with him. David is a former Major League Baseball player. He played with such organizations as the Orioles, the Astros, the Mets, to name a few. And he played in the minors as well. And okay, let's get down to brass tacks. I have a lot of baseball guests on this podcast. Not a lot, but I have a bunch of them on here. I love baseball. It's a big part of my life. But this isn't an episode for you guys to say, oh, it's another baseball guy. I don't really care. Stick with me. Stick with this episode, because the story that David tells of his life nearly being taken away is tremendous. Bringing it all into perspective of who he was before that event took place and who he is today is astounding. The fact that A, he should not be alive, and B, he should not be walking is just huge for what you see that he is doing to this day and where he came from after that event took place. So I really hope that you guys don't get turned off by just the baseball thing if you don't care about baseball, and that you listen to this inspirational story of a man, a dad, a son who was an athlete. And for those of you who do like baseball, the stories that he's telling about his time in the minor leagues will shed a big light on things that have been talked about quite a bit during this offseason about minor leaguers and how do they live that life with the amount of money that they are really not making in comparison with major leaguers. And we get into that a little bit with David and the hardships of that life, not only for the person who is living it, but for their family and for a man who is married and has children and a family to be living this not lavish life on the road pursuing their dream is really kind of a cool story as well to hear about it from that perspective. So let me do a little bit of business before we get to the episode and remind you that Daddy Unscripted is a very proud member of the Osiris Podcast Network. And let's let somebody else tell you a tiny bit more about that. Osiris.
Hi, I'm Bob Crawford from the Avett Brothers, and the podcast you're listening to is part of the Osiris Network, a global community connecting passionate music fans with podcasts about music, artists, and culture. For more information about all the shows in our network, please visit OsirisPod.com. Osiris.
Okay, and before we get into this, I will also just remind you that this is the first of my daddy-son package episodes on the Daddy Unscripted podcast. So David's dad, Ross, has already been on the podcast, so it might be interesting. And if you want to put the whole big story together of this, which really does add a giant piece to it, you can go back and listen to Ross's episodes. We did two, and the second one really is focused a lot on baseball, but the first episode talks a lot about his family life and him being a dad, and that ties in a lot to this episode with David. So just throwing that out there. Now, let's get started with my conversation with David Newhan. All All right, we are here today actually on location. This has been a while since I've done this in somebody else's home, here in the home of David Newhand. David, thank you for bringing me and all of us, because I've just got this big audience, not really, that's here in your home, so thank you.
It's our pleasure. We're live from the classroom, so
yeah.
we're a homeschool family, and we took over the classroom, so that was great. We were able to show the kids what a mobile podcast studio looks like, so it gave us a great opportunity for school today.
Yeah, so they'll be taking over, because what is your dad's blog, and do you still participate in that? It's called, was it Newhand and
Newhand? Newhand on baseball.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I did for a little while, and the writing thing's more his. Not to say that I won't get into writing at some point, or maybe tap into that later in life. But I haven't been participating too much lately.
Yeah. Well, then your kids now know how to make a podcast, so they'll have like new hands on baseball as their future domain. So you kids better go buy that right now, buythat.com.
Exactly.
And upset grandpa when you've taken over his trademark or whatever. So I'm excited because this has been a while coming, the finalization of an actual father-son linking on the podcast. I've had a couple of people that I've talked about doing this with, but when I recorded with Ross, I kind of had that vision from the get-go. And Ross's episodes were number 19 and 20, all the way back, released in October and November of 2016. So it's been quite a while coming from this. So if you guys want to get a little bit more background on that, I encourage you to go back to 19, being more of Ross talking about his life and being a dad and his parents even, and talking about meeting your mom and getting married and having you guys around and everything. And then the next episode is basically pretty much all baseball and us talking about the Angels coming out here and his work with them and the Dodgers and everything. So really interesting episodes, and make this, like David and I talked about before we started recording, kind of unique, because normally we would just hear David's stories about his dad, which we still will get into a little bit. But David, just kind of in a nutshell, I'll let you tell me. We'll just go normal. Let's go back and tell from your perspective a little bit about your dad.
Going back, earliest memories, just him working a lot with the LA Times and coming up with baseball, and obviously being a baseball family, and our proximity to the game and him covering the sport. I grew up wanting to be a part of baseball, and so kind of early childhood memories of going to spring training and visiting dad in Palm Springs and getting the opportunity to run around Angels spring training camp and even go down in the clubhouse and work the clubhouse and run on errands for some of the guys. I mean, it wasn't as glamorous, I guess, as it is now, as far as the facilities and all the other stuff that are involved with major league teams. But it was a municipal stadium out there in Palm Springs, and it wasn't like they were have five-star chefs in the clubhouse. And so running errands for different guys to go grab them a hot dog or this or that, or being able to take ground balls with some of the Angel coaches and stuff of that nature. But just remember, the closeness to the game, and obviously he was traveling a lot during those years until I really got into high school. He was really doing the beat and traveling with the team in and out of town, but would always kind of make the effort to be there when he could. But definitely during the baseball season, there was a lot of times where he was gone on the road, but that's the memories I kind of retain mostly are just kind of being around the game, and then obviously some of the childhood vacations up to the Sierras and the fishing trips, stuff like that. But just him working a lot and just writing a lot.
Mm-hmm. He, when we talked, and you guys have, I know all of you have already gone back and listened like you were instructed to. So you'll be nodding your head in agreement, but it wasn't, I wouldn't say that it was like, I have had some people on who have talked about regrets and being remorseful about, and probably from the reverse side as kids wishing they had spent more time with their dads or whatever, but there definitely was a point where he was kind of talking about your childhood and your sister's childhood and, you know, feeling bad, I guess, about the fact that he was just gone so much because he was working and how much he was traveling and how much he missed like your early days playing baseball and things that he wasn't able to do and whatnot. And it soaked in to me for sure, because you do think about, and for me, like I've talked with a number of baseball people. So you think about how cool it is, how great that you're like doing something that you enjoy throughout such a long period of the year. And for a lot of guys, you're living out your childhood dream and you're traveling and seeing different cities and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, you do think about that hardship and that difficulty for the people who are still at home. And, you know, you maybe don't think about that as much for the players as they are going back home after a hard day's work, or and home being the
maybe not home.
Whatever hotel yeah. or whatever yeah. it may be, and you know, trying to squeeze in that little bit of time before they try to unwind from their day and trying to sneak in that time with their family with a call, or I mean, going back 20 years ago, a phone call yeah. and that's it. And now, you know, they're able to do FaceTime and
sure.
probably pretty soon bring up just holograms of one another in your room right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would have changed, you know, a lot. And like you said, I don't know if it's, I wouldn't say there's regret there, but, you know, or remorse, but you know, that's what dads do. You
yeah.
know, they provide for their family. They have a job, they go out and you have a strong work ethic. And, obviously he did that and he provided for us and he did it to a great level, with the culmination of being inducted into the Riders wing of the Hall of Fame. So, obviously he was, not only persistent at what he did, but he was great at it as
yeah.
well. So I don't say there's any remorse and, you know, but there's just, you know, the grass is always greener on,
right.
It's not always the grass is always greener and there's a flip side to everything. And,
right.
You know, a lot of time in order to achieve greatness, you need that discipline and you need that to put the time in. And so, he did that on the career side. I don't think he missed as much as he probably thinks he missed.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom did a great job of, you know, wearing a lot of hats at that time, but there was also things that probably he was able to do that, and we were able to experience because he was involved in the game. Like I was saying, with the early childhood memories of being so close to Angel games and getting to go to spring training and have those experiences, as well as, you know, during the summer times when he was in town, he really wasn't at the stadium till later in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to spend the time with him in the morning, even if he was maybe preparing or doing some work. And so, I mean, there, you know, you could look at any situation and I think there's, you look back on it, hindsight's 2020, but there's positives and negatives to any situation in life. And he chose his career route and it was good for him and it was good for our family. And, as the man of the house, he provided for us. And ultimately that's what our job is to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is very key what you're saying too, because some of those things that we feel like are missed opportunities and they may seem enormous in hindsight or even at that time, maybe don't compare with that Sunday morning breakfast or just something that seems little or that is yeah. forgotten over time, but really does stick with you as a kid or whatever that you are bringing forth and thinking, that was something that really meant a lot to me, even if it didn't seem like it did at that time.
Yeah. And when he was around, I think he did make the effort to be present, you know, and mm-hmm. I think that's as a dad, you know, sometimes I lose sight of, or some of the things that I like to do is just kind of, you know, is be present. Like mm-hmm. when you are here, be in the now and take advantage of the opportunity. Probably not the best at it, but can certainly strive to get better.
Yeah. I have been thinking about that a lot. And there are all those things that, you know, the very easiest low hanging fruit is hug your loved ones every day, because life is fleeting. And, you know, it's, I say that in a cliche-ish way, and it can be a cliche, but it is a low-hanging fruit. I mean, that's like the easiest thing possible to do every day. And regardless of what experiences we've had in our lives or in our families, it still is something that's so easy, and you just, we all can be better at everything every day. No so. Doubt.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's easy to say, practice what you preach.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And we're all full of these great ideas, but, you know, we just got to remember to stay in the moment and do it. You know, there's a reason, like you were saying, looking back, kind of, I was just thinking about, you know, the front windshield's a lot bigger than the rear windshield.
True. So, yeah.
You know, just, all we could do is, you know, we can't change what's happened, but just live in the present and look forward to, and embrace each day for the gift that it is.
Yeah, that's true. I think within that whole thing is the idea of time management and priorities. What you make your priorities are so huge. And those two like life skills that some of us are fairly weak at times, you know, like I could be doing so many other things right now other than sitting in my, who was it? Maybe it was, I think it was Ryan Dempster recently who was saying, I'm playing Bejeweled Blitz right now on my phone. And instead I could be doing yeah. whatever X, Y, and Z that would yeah. be so much better at this time. And it is tough now more than ever to like pull yourself away from the kajillion distractions that are in our face all the time. But it is that taking that little slow breath and thinking, okay, I'm going to do this instead right now. And that's something all of us can strive for. I'm so guilty of that. So, okay. So we talked a little bit about your dad. So after when did he he retired while you were playing in the majors, or were
yeah,
you?
So he was doing the beat pretty much my whole life until I got to about high school. And then at that point he was promoted to national baseball writer for the Times.
Yeah.
And so that's when he started doing more columns and like Sunday week in review type mm-hmm. stuff, covering the economics of it during the off seasons. He was inducted into the writer's wing in 2001. So he's pretty much been retired since then.
And yeah,
when I was in the big leagues, kind of took a step back. He did a little bit of freelance stuff during those years, mm-hmm. but not as heavy as before.
Yeah. So you, I'm assuming you're basically just all geared baseball when you were a kid, or were you playing other sports too?
I did some soccer, but baseball is always my passion and what I wanted to do. And I was the dummy in class when, yeah, I want to be a baseball player. Okay. Yeah.
Dreaming.
You're not going to be bigger than 5'9", 5'10". And
yeah,
those aren't the pro athletes, but yeah, it was just a desire in my heart and I always wanted to do it. And that's basically how we were geared. Although I do enjoy all sports and just played some soccer growing up and obviously would play in the backyard, anything,
yeah,
you know, and we'd go play the mud football when it rained mm-hmm. and over at the school and, but played 1 year of football in high school, but that was never my thing, or I never had the size to do that. And, baseball was always my passion.
Yeah. And so you played in high school and did you go straight to Pepperdine from high school?
I took I took the scenic route. So I graduated, I would say a little bit undersized and on the young side, as the 17-year-old going into college with the late birthday, but played on a really great high school team where we were, if we won two more games, semifinals and the finals, we would have ended up number one in the nation.
Oh, wow.
So I was a huge program and always held my own. But and so I kind of had a desire in my heart that like I would play Division I baseball and was never getting run off the field by some of the best players in the nation, really. When you're growing up playing high school baseball in Orange County, you're playing the best and just wanted to play Division I ball. And I didn't really get the opportunities except for a few different offers from some schools. And so I decided to go to Cypress Junior College for a year and went there, had a great season my freshman year. And numerous schools were saying, go back and you'll be the first guy we talk to. And at that point in the summer, Georgia Tech came in, said, hey, we got a full ride for you right now. You and Nomar Garcia can go play up the middle. You'll be playing second base. And so I went out there. I liked the campus and decided to go there. And then when I went there, it was nothing as I envisioned. I loved the baseball side of things. And the team was great. We had, I think, three other first rounders on that team. With Nomar Garcia Parra, Jason Veritek, Jay Payton. We're all just outstanding. We were number one in the nation for a while until we ran into Darren Dreifert in the regional. But it didn't feel right to me, and I decided to transfer. And you can never go wrong with Malibu, right?
So yeah.
So I ended up going there my junior year, didn't get drafted, went back for my senior, and that was a great thing. It allowed me to get closer to my degree, and I was able to get my degree and graduated there in 95 and ended up getting drafted after my senior year there. But it was fun. It was beautiful, especially when you're living on the beach side and on the coast side. And we had a house about 10 miles north of Pepperdine of the campus up by Zuma Beach. And it was super, super fun.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know,
Malibu without a mortgage. I don't know how you can kind of get further from reality.
Yeah, seriously. As a college
as kid. A college kid. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, it's all downhill from here.
Especially coming out from Georgia Tech to that.
Yeah. Have a nice life, kid.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
you're graduated. And you're like, oh, okay.
So who ended up drafting you? Was it the Padres?
So I was drafted originally by Oakland.
Okay.
And the cool thing about that was my best friend from Pepperdine was drafted by Oakland at the same time. Huh. And so we both came out of Pepperdine, and this was the draft of 95. He was a 10th rounder. I was a 17th rounder, and began our career together. And so went out to our complex, which is no longer their complex, Papago Park in Arizona. Had a couple of days there. Worked out, and then we got on the bus, went over to Oakland, saw a game, and then bus back up to Medford, Oregon, and commenced the old professional
life in the
career,
minors.
The glamorous, glamorous life of a professional baseball player, and
in Oregon, nonetheless,
in Oregon, Dreadford, Oregon, no, Medford, Oregon. It was fun. It was an experience to kick off my first year as an Oakland A, a Medford A, and then I ended up going getting called up to West Michigan, which is Grand Rapids. From there, later that summer, and finished a year there, and we made a little bit of a playoff run with that team in the Midwest League. And then I went back to Pepperdine and finished my degree, and then really got just, you know, dialed into my life in baseball from there.
Mm-hmm. And as you are kind of bouncing around, where was your first cup of coffee? I'm air quoting that. Wasn't with the A's,
no,
right?
No, it wasn't. So I made it to Double A with the A's, and then was traded in the off season of 98 to the Padres. So I played double. Then I went back to Double A with the Padres in 98, and then started Triple A in 99, and came up with San Diego in June of 99. Me and a good friend Gary Matthews Jr. came up first day in the big league, same time.
Wow!
And my first game experience was coming in to pinch run for the King, Jim Leyritz, who who walked in a tie game. I think it was a interleague game against Seattle. And so I came out and pinch ran for him. And Davey Lopes sternly told me if the guy moves his front hip, then take off and steal second. And that'd be the first thing that the pitcher would move. And so I took my lead. I watched the front hit move. He delivered the ball to the plate, and I took my secondary and did not steal the base. And I came back to the bag, and he sternly said, "Did you see it? Did you see the front hit move?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, then take off." So the next pitch, same thing happened. I took off, stole second. I ended up, I'm not sure how, but came around and scored. And go out to actually as the top, bottom of eight, and then top of nine, San Diego, you know. So it's Trevor time, and hell's bells are blaring. And Trevor, I had remembered Trevor from, he's another Cypress guy.
So
he was kind of around Cypress and working out when he was making his transition from shortstop to pitcher back when I was in playing at Cypress. So, and he was always great to me with San Diego, but so it was super exciting because, you know, you're a kid that obviously with my dad being so close to the game, I just loved baseball and, you know, and then now you're in the middle of it all, and you got AC/DC blaring and the Padres had just made the World Series run the year before. Mm-hmm. And so he came in and basically, We turned a double play that inning to get us out of the whatever jam we were in, and we won the game. And so it was just like, you know, the cherry on top of a Sunday, getting called up and being able to come in and produce to help the team win, and super fun. And then the next game where I actually started was with same thing, San Diego, but we were playing interleague again. And it just so happened that we were playing against the A's. And so it was the team that drafted me.
Yeah.
And so it was a very comfortable feeling for me. Kind of, I came in facing a pitcher that I had faced in the minors, mm-hmm. and he was kind of a young kid coming up too, who had a marvelous career, Tim Hudson. So I felt comfortable facing him. I felt comfortable facing a lot of the guys that I already knew,
mm-hmm.
and that was just an amazing experience getting a chance to play against Oakland, and ended up going like I think 3-for-4, and my best friend that I was talking about earlier, Ryan Christensen, who was with me at Pepperdine, he was on that team. Hmm. And so it was just a tremendous experience of full circle and making it to the big leagues and then actually getting to play and having some fun out there.
Yeah, that's such a cool story. So that was your one and only season with the Padres?
So, yeah, I was kind of up and down that year. And then the next year, I ended up making the team with San Diego, had some time up a little bit in AAA and back up. And then I was traded to Philly from there.
Okay.
So, yeah, and then I went over to Philadelphia, played for Brad Mills. After that 99 season, Brad Mills was the first base coach with the Philadelphia Phillies. And he managed our team in the Arizona Fall League. And so after he had managed me, they were trying to, I guess, trade and wanted to get me over there for that year in 2000. And then in August, they were able to do it. So him and Terry Francona have been together. Terry was the manager in Philly. And then, so they brought me over there and long story short, they all got fired after that season. So that wasn't really great for me, but, it ended up, I think, working out for Terry because he went over to Boston after that. And the rest is history, you know, with his run in Cleveland now, too. And Brad's been with him ever since as well. So, 2000, I was up and down and then went over to Philly.
And then you were from there to Baltimore, yeah?
There to Baltimore, yeah.
Which is kind of your league peak?
I would say.
With them,
I would say so. I was in Baltimore and had a really, really tremendous run in being able to actually first get over there. The Lord's hand was in that the whole time because I actually started off in 2004 between Philly and 2004 in Baltimore. That was 2001 to 2004. I actually had a battle through some shoulder injuries and had to have two shoulder surgeries. One for torn labrum, the other they cleaned up that torn labrum again and had a little tear on the rotator cuff. And so it was kind of a long process of getting back into shape and being able to play and get on the field. And so I started that 04 season with Texas in AAA and was really playing well, hitting the ball all over the place. And I had an out clause in my contract, which rarely worked, but it was an out clause for a 3-day window to get a big league job. And Baltimore bid on it. And so I was able to get over there. And as soon as I was getting a chance or got the chance to go over there, like this is how much Lawrence Ham was on it, was the Texas team that I was playing with in AAA. We were playing Colorado Springs in Colorado. Baltimore decided to do the deal. They're playing Interleague and heading to play Colorado that next day.
Oh,
so
perfect.
So I just drove over there and I think my dad ended up writing a Father's Day article on this and one of the last really kind of stories I think he wrote for the Times. But I think it was Father's Day and I pinch hit or it was right before Father's Day, the weekend before. And I pinch hit was my first chance with Baltimore and ended up probably hitting the farthest home run of my career.
That's awesome.
In the ninth inning. We didn't win the game or anything, but it was almost a third deck in Denver and I could, you know,
wow,
still see the ball flying, but it allowed me to play the next day.
Yeah.
And I got a couple hits and then I played the next day and I got a couple hits and my dad wrote a nice Father's Day article about it and got some phone calls from some friends. Even Dave Roberts said it was like, you know, just a great article.
Yeah.
That, you know, about a father's love and seeing his son do well at the sport he loves. And so, yeah, that gave me provided me with some energy to keep going that year in 04 and ended up hitting over 300 that year and really solidified myself to be able to stay on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
and played with Baltimore a couple more years before I moved on to the Mets and then to Houston.
Yeah. And do you remember who it was that got injured? Was it somebody got injured in Baltimore that you ended up sliding right into that role?
Yeah. Melvin Mora, I guess it basically, yeah. Like all things just kind of lined up and like I was saying, was perfect. And I think the night before Melvin Mora twisted his ankle.
Right.
And then, yeah, it just gave me a chance to come in and start playing right away. Once I got that opportunity, I was hot and like started with like a 14 game hit streak and for a month hitting over 400. And it was just the opportunity where they couldn't get me out of the lineup at that point.
Right. I remember this very clearly because your brother-in-law and I were in a fantasy league together.
Yeah.
And I can't remember which one of us ended up picking you up quicker. And whoever it was, the other person was like angrily yelling over the Yahoo, whatever chat or whatever through the league. And I remember it being something, not just because of that, but this was my first like experience. And now I was thinking about this as I was driving down. You think about this with the families of players and how into everything, even the people who maybe aren't that into baseball, if there is such a thing. I don't think those people exist on this planet, but because you start to know like who else is playing and what does that effect have on, I mean, in your case it was a different situation because you were waiting for that opening to get to be able to play. And so I remember that was one of the first times where I was like, I'm kind of happy that Melvin Mora's hurt. No offense to him,
but
I hope he stays hurt for a little while and David still gets his reps in there. And I remember there was an article in Sports Illustrated about you during that time, right?
Yeah, I think the next year they did an article on that with my father. And then at that point, Nico was born too. So Nico, he got his first taste of fame and there's a picture of him like inside my glove
awesome.
When he was a baby and with his grandpa as well. So
that's pretty cool.
So working on now our third generation maybe of baseball player, and yeah, he's got a bright future ahead of him as well.
Yeah. That's part of the really, I mean, I've talked about it with a bunch of dads, how baseball, and be it different subjects, some of them it's been music or whatever, that string that ties the generations together. And it is interesting to me how, you know, there are some people who don't have that string at all. And what is that? How does that affect their relationship? And does it or does it not weaken the bond or whatever that may be? But thinking about, for so many of us, it's just watching baseball and what that meant to us, and maybe playing catch with your dad or whatever, but having something that's rooted in a much different and deeper way, like with you and your dad, and then potentially with Nico, is cool. And I mean, obviously there are other father son duos that are like that. Vladdy Jr. coming up right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's so cool to think about the pride factor, not as in pride cometh before a fall, but how proud parents get to be of this lineage that is going down, of something that they obviously loved so much and built their life around, and not just pride in a way of good job in doing that because you saw how much I loved that, but getting to see them with that much enjoyment and fulfillment from that same thing is, I mean, I don't know what it means.
Yeah, I think you summed it up. I mean, that's pretty cool how you summed it up there. And regardless of what the venue is, I think, like you said, when both of you have the passion for it, it's to be able to experience that together. You kind of, there's some insight of like, you know what the other person's feeling and experiencing. Mm-hmm. And there's insight that you could share from, you know, obviously along the way. And, you know, I was able to lean on my father heavily during my road, whether it be in pro ball or before that, just with certain experiences and the insight he could give me and his expertise and just being around the game and the proximity to information is so much better. And Nico has that now with me. But whatever it is, whatever his passion turns into or he really wants to follow, that's what we'll support. And obviously, but right now, yeah, he loves the game, and it's fun watching him enjoy his time playing and really going at it with all his heart.
Mm-hmm. It makes it cool. So for any of you younger people listening, make sure you do what your dads tell you is the thing that we're trying to say. I'm just kidding. I think, you know, for me, like, it was going to a game and keeping score and learning how to keep score in the program, which is a lost art basically now, and seeing some of that stuff and going with that excitement. And I think that's what makes it that kind of really cool thing. What, just like you said, whatever venue it is, whatever thing it might be,
yeah,
because it does create that different connection. You think about the dads who try to push their kids into stuff,
yeah,
and that false connection that is there, like, you can tell. I mean, it's like having a wooden nickel or biting into I don't know what analogy I was just going to go with, like eating a fake ding dong or Twinkie. Like, it's, it looks like it's the same.
This is carob chocolate.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We kind of jumped ahead. So during all of that time previous to, what year was Nico born? 06?
05.
Mm-hmm. So previous to that, what year did you get married?
What year did I?
Oh, shoot.
2001.
Okay. Very good. the wife is not listening. Not
February
listening.
11th,
I'm sure somebody would have run in at that point.
Yeah.
So 2001. So during, and also you are with her for how long during your minor league playing, during all of it, or?
No, we had been introduced about a year before.
Oh, okay.
By mutual friends with San Diego.
Okay.
I used to surf with one of the stadium carpenters, and he shaped boards, and one of the guys that would buy for the food and for the stadium, they knew they knew Karen because Karen would come around and her business, her father's business, was selling produce, and she was selling to, had Qualcomm as one of her accounts. And these two had knew both of us, and they played matchmaker. So I was out there and working out in this, in the wintertime. And I was, she came in one day to, and was talking to them. They made her wait around to wait for when I was going to be leaving. And so they introduced us in the parking lot, and then they went behind the scenes and called both of us. And I don't know what you did, but she was loving those baby blues. And so, set us up, and, the rest is history.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a random, I mean, even though it's matchmaking, yeah, like that's a pretty cool connection of how distant you guys kind of were. So she's living through this minor league playing that you are doing and whatnot. Is she just staying here in area, or
she came out with me, and she's been at my side the whole time. Yeah. And then we've committed or she's really committed to homeschooling. And so the kids are able to freeze us up as a family to spend more time together.
Yeah.
And yeah, they've come out wherever I've been regardless.
Yeah, that's cool. So the first year that you are playing with child in the family now, how much different, and I mean, you can tell me how difficult or not difficult that was for you and for the family.
Yeah. I mean, it's a life changing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, no, all the people, they say, oh, it's not that big of a deal. And you know, they're, that's not the truth. It's a huge, adjustment, and, for the better.
But it
does change everything, you know, having the baby and, your freedoms and like every kind of situation of life, it changes, but it was such a blessing.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Well, kudos to Karen. And
yeah. She's been amazing.
I'm sure that part is just so tricky for both parents, like dealing with that while you are dealing,
especially when I still like, you know, and the thing is, like we were talking about earlier, you don't really see kind of the behind the scenes things. Like, you go play the game and it's glamorous, and then you come home and it might not be home, or it might be on the road. Well, at least the player really still has somewhat of a life.
Right.
Like, you're actually working, you're out, you're doing stuff, you're
seeing other adults.
You know, sometimes the wives, they're just behind, and like they're not even traveling with you. Because you can't just get on a plane every, you know, and go
every three days
and go to the next spot. And now you know, for us, she's all the way across the country on another coast away from any sort of help, you know, from family or from friends. So it's really a tough adjustment, especially for the wives, and being able to adjust and dial in and get into a network where they have other people and they have some sort of a life, really, where they're just not really trapped being by themselves or being so lonely, or you know, it's just them and the kids on an island. So she's really had to deal with a lot, like just following my dreams and my passions, and she's really made that commitment to seeing me succeed.
Yeah, which is, I'm immediately thinking of your mom as you are saying that, and the role that she played with regards to your dad and you kids and everything. And it is very typical for us to talk about how crazy cool the moms are that are taking care of so many things for different situations and different unique life paths that the husbands are on. And so, Karen, we love you.
I love you, Karen.
We don't have an award to give you today, but you'll get your jewels in heaven.
There you go.
So you are playing professionally until what year? What was your last year playing?
Last year playing was 2008. I was with Houston. 2008, I actually had a decent year, and we kind of just missed out on a wild card then had a tough time finding a job the next year. Mm-hmm. And he kind of got at that age where they were kind of sifting through us older players. Mm-hmm. Not that I was tremendously old, but I think I just had too much service time and was getting older. And then and then also was kind of tied into the same age group as probably the steroid era. And mm-hmm. so I think it was like just a huge shift in baseball at that point, really. And so 2009 was tough to get a job, and actually kind of went back into spring training with Houston, but really nothing certain at all. And then was released, but was able to be picked up by the Phillies, but it was on a minor league deal, and went played AAA with them in Lehigh Valley. And so I played 2009, was my last year really playing. Came home in 2009 because Philly wanted me to be a coach as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
coach player.
Yeah. So I kind of signed on right away as a player coach, but, mm-hmm. but then they're like, hey, the manager's like, hey, I want you to play. And like, so I went to Lehigh for like a day or two and then went down to Clearwater, played 3 days there and got basically, it was like extended spring training. So mm-hmm. I let off like every inning for 3 days and mm-hmm. got like 20 at bats. And then they sent me back to Lehigh and I played every day since, like after that,
yeah.
as a player really, and did nothing more than played that year. But they wanted me to transition. And so I came home to Oceanside at that point thinking, okay, what, you know, kind of at a crossroads here, what am I going to do? And about 2 weeks into that off season, I was paddling out by myself to go surf and just south of the pier in Oceanside, and ended up jumping off my board and just finished a wave, went backside, got caught between tides and thought I was deeper outside, and kind of jumped off my board to skim the top of the water, and pile drove myself right into a sandbar and heard a big crunch and couldn't move actually as I was floating up to the top of the water. I was starting to float up and trying to move my arms, and just the reverberation of everything just kind of like tingling through my extremities. And I had two thoughts at that point. Was first thought was, if I get my head above water, I should probably call for help because mm-hmm. I'm floating up and not, I can't move. I'm paralyzed at this point. And the next thought was in my head was, Jesus, let me move. And as soon as I said that in my head, I was able to move my right arm, grab my board, got myself on it. Long story short, got myself in.
You don't have to long story short this. The story is so crazy. You don't
yeah.
have to shorten
it. Well, I mean, like paddled in, kind of gained my composure on shore, and just like, okay, now being an athlete, you're like, okay, well, I was hurt for a second.
Yeah.
And that was a good zing. And okay, can I move? Yeah, I can move, but it's kind of crunching around when I move in my neck. As I twist my head around, kind of hear a little crunch, but let's walk home. I could walked home, and at that point, like, cleaned up, and my neck was really locking up on me. And mm-hmm. like I said, as an athlete, you're kind of like, kind of want to do an assessment. Okay.
Yeah.
You hurt, it was the hurt or injured thing. Like, and mm-hmm. thought, hey, yeah, Karen called her and she was in with her family. And said, hey, I think I should probably go to the hospital and just get x-rays, make sure I'm okay. And ended up doing that. And they kept me overnight. And I had shattered C2, had a, what the doctor said, comminuted fracture of C2. And so I had gone through, obviously, the shoulder stuff. And when I was in Baltimore, I fractured my fibula and had a spiral fracture on that. And so I was like, okay, well, what's... After he said comminuted a few times, I was like, okay, well, I know there's a spiral fracture because mm-hmm. I had that. I know there, what you've heard of compound fracture, right?
Yeah.
I wonder what comminuted means. So, you know, you Google it, and comminuted's when the bone's fragmented into three or more pieces. So,
oh my gosh.
So it's kind of like just I combusted
right.
C2 and was shattered. So, but by the grace of God, I've had a full recovery. And I mean, I really should be dead. And if I'm not dead, I should be in a wheelchair, but I'm not. And I didn't have surgery. I we got on this story because we were 2010 transitioning.
Yeah.
So 09, and I kind of missed all of 2010 during this process of not being able to really do anything except for take some long walks and get some vitamin D and try and get some sun to help the bone heal as quickly as possible. But 2011, the Padres allowed me to come into spring training as a player with the idea of if I wasn't going to help the big league club out soon, then I would transition into a coaching role.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went in and played in a big league game, hit in a big league game, and it was awesome. And went to minor league camp. But then at the end of that spring, it was kind of a decision on both sides. Like, let's start coaching and
mm-hmm.
transition into that. And spent a few years in the Padres organization as a coach, a hitting coach, and interim managed for a little bit. In Lake Elsinore, and then I went to Oakland for a year, and I was a manager there, ran the extended spring training program, and then took all the kind of the younger kids in the second half of the year, and we did short season up in Vermont and played in the Penn League. And the year after that, I was going to be back with Oakland, but Detroit called and offered me a position to be the assistant hitting coach in the big leagues with Detroit. So I stayed there for 2 years and we had a nice little run with a great offense over there. And it's mm-hmm. fun to work with some of those guys, with Miguel Cabrera and JD Martinez and mm-hmm. Victor Martinez, Ian Kinsler, and just some really established big leaguers. And then the last 2 years I've spent in the Angel organization as the infield coordinator. And it's been fun on the coaching side. It allows me to still pursue my passion, and mm-hmm. I'm hoping I'll be back into the big leagues with a more substantial role sooner than later.
Mm-hmm. So, and who were you assistant hitting coach with?
That was with Detroit, with the Tigers.
Was the other coach?
Wally Joyner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
I couldn't remember who it was.
Wally's World. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was fun. And Brad Ausmus was our manager.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we had a great group to work with. Couple of silver sluggers over those 2 years. Mm-hmm. Miguel won one of his batting titles there that one of those years. And it's just a blast to be with some guys that are really on top of their game and at the highest level of any of the hitters in baseball.
Yeah. And now that team's manager is now the manager of the Angels.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So
it's all coming
full circle.
Another full circle for you. That's pretty cool. So now that you are doing this, you are staying local with the infield coaching. Are you doing it for all of their different levels?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So the last 2 years, that was traveling around from home base was home here
mm-hmm.
in California. And then I would travel out from here about 20 days a month to all of our affiliates, our minor league affiliates.
Between Salt Lake City and then Cucamonga and Elsinore, basically? Yeah,
So Salt Lake, Mobile, Alabama, Double A, Inland Empire, San Bernardino, High A ball. And then we had a team in Burlington, Iowa, and then another team in Orem, Utah. And then obviously the complex in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go out to the Dominican as well once a year, a year.
During their... not during their winter
like
ball.
November, like right after July 2nd. Usually they have a big signing date in July mm-hmm. and then they start kind of going. So sometime in July, we try and head out there. And then again in November or October time, they do an instructional league out there.
Yeah. So is that like the massive youth movement kids?
Yeah. And, yeah. I mean, we not just our organization, but definitely in ours, you look at our upper echelon of kind of the top 30 or whatever those are ranked, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to discount any of our players because even if they're not in that top 30, like you never know when a kid's going to pop and he's going to become a major league player, like
right.
it's going to happen. And they're all talented enough to do it. But when you go to the rankings and stuff like that, I think you look at the international signings and they've had a tremendous impact on, the backbone of our organization and really strengthening us.
Yeah. And on a lot of them, I mean, that's kind of been the big deal and difference over the past, 5 to 10 years, it's kind of blown up a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a way of really impacting the organization and providing them with talent, and you're able to work with them from a younger age. But it just provides a way of really changing the culture and really growing the organization from the ground up.
Yeah. And so as you're doing all this traveling, how much are you able to spend at home during the course of the regular season?
Yeah. So spring training, we're in Tempe. And so it's easier for the family to spend more time there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nice. And then, so like basically April to beginning of September is the go time mm-hmm. for the minor league season. And, I'm out about 20 days of the month during that time. The good thing for me was Inland Empire was close. And
right.
So I could
kinda, stay here
I
could, and drive
I,
out.
I could drive out or I could just get a, you know, it's a little far to go back and forth 3-4 days in a row,
mm-hmm.
but, I could get a hotel out there. I could come home one of those days. I was fortunate enough to be able to bring Nico with me
mm-hmm.
and make a little father son trip and some bonding time there.
That's cool.
And he's at the age now where he could kind of, you know, he could do that. He could experience that and hold his own around those guys and not really be a detriment to having him in the clubhouse or, you know, some crazy kid running around or where the players are, you know, obviously it's about the players, but
right.
He's mature enough to be able to experience that and be there. So those were fun trips to be able to do that with him.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see, like, you're able to see it more like All-Star Weekend and stuff like that with the players and their kids out on the field and hanging out in the dugout and all that stuff. But everything that I've ever heard about this, and I'm obviously way on the outside, but how great that is even for the other players seeing, you know, of course, my first thought is Big Poppy with his son or whatever, like being able to have that experience and share that, the joy that it brings to those dads is always a good thing for just about anybody.
I think, let's face it, I mean, it's a kid's game played by
right.
kids that never grew up. Really.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, you know, when another kid's around, as long as they're really not out of control and mature enough to handle themselves around some of those guys, they enjoy it. You know, those guys are playing PS4 as well.
Yeah.
In the clubhouse and,
oh boy.
You know, they're messing around and trying to, you know, throw their cup in the trash can or whatever
right.
it is. You
yeah.
know, everything is a competition to them and,
yeah.
and they're kids at heart as well. So having another kid around that's an actual kid and
yeah.
is fun for them. And, all the guys have been great to Nico, through the couple of years that I've been able to take him over, and a lot of guys still, you know, that I'm talking to, they still ask about him. And,
mm-hmm.
and so it's great that, he's able to have those experiences.
Yeah. And how much with your old, I mean, obviously you've got over a decade with time served. They call it service time though, right? I mean, they do call it service time.
Service time. I don't know if that's the same as time served.
I'm just reversing the words. But how much are you still, do you still talk with some of those guys that you're not directly involved with?
Pretty often.
Yeah.
I think we keep in touch. There's certain guys that you keep in touch with and then,
yeah.
And then there's guys that like you don't really. And, but basically, you know, it's like you've gone through so much with these guys when you go through a season with people, in baseball, and baseball in itself is such a small fraternity.
Right.
That when you see them again, it's almost like no time's lost.
Yeah.
And you kind of, it's easy to catch up.
Yeah. And your dad has a lot of that as well, right? With some of the writers that he's worked with. Whenever I see his posts on Facebook or whatever on his blog, I'll always see some of those guys that I recognize
mm-hmm.
from reading things when I was a kid watching baseball. And it's cool to see, like you said, it is a little fraternity kind of, not in a parties on the lawn kind of way. Well,
hopefully not.
Maybe for some.
Yeah.
But that is cool, the bond like we were saying, the bond that's created between some of these fathers and sons, but also between all these other guys. And because let's face it, like I've talked about this with a lot of guys, like men are very different from women and our communication level is very different. And so all of that time that you spend with these guys over the course of the season, like you're saying, mm-hmm. like that's a special season of times that you're going through with these guys. So I think it's cool that all of those friendships that do extend beyond that, that all of you guys are able to hold on to those.
Yeah. And, you know, on the flip side of what we were talking about earlier with how much pressure or the burden that, that moms face and the families face during the season, on the flip side of that, all that time that you are spending at the park, those guys that you're with and sharing the time with those teams, those are your, that's your family. Mm-hmm. And you're actually probably spending more time with them than you are with your actual family.
Yeah.
For those, 6 months, 7 months out of the year, whether it's from March to in the big leagues, you know, you come
to
in
November.
You come in mid February with the hopes that you're playing till November.
Yeah.
So you go through some battles with them and, you're not going to be, it's not going to be all happy all the time. And, but you got to figure out a way to make it work and you got to work through it. And just like you do with your family.
Yeah. I think it's great too, how you're able to do a very similar thing to what your dad did with you with passing this on to Nico and being able to experience it with him. And, you know, he may have been very young at the time, but being able to see some of it with you doing it on the field and now you getting to experience that on whatever level it is with him, whether it's him playing in his little league games or bringing him to the park with you is radical. I mean, not a lot of people get that. So
no, for sure. It's been fun. And I think he's getting some unique experiences of being able to come to the park with me. And the year before last, it just so happened that we were in Inland Empire and I had it scheduled and Mike Trout ended up being on rehab there. So he was there with Trouty and they're on the dugout bench together during the game and he's sitting right next to him. And I took Nico up earlier in the day for a few days and he's taking batting practice on the field and Mike's coming in to get ready for his day and stops and watches Nico taking batting practice and, that's, you know, gives him a couple words. And so, I mean, I think he's had some pretty cool experiences with being able to come work out and come to the field and be hanging out in the clubhouse with the guys and see that at a young age and handle himself with maturity as he does that. And it's a passion for him too. So I think it's really cool for him.
Yeah. It's how often are you, I do a lot of things that I'm thinking forward to my kid as an older teenager and beyond that. And then thinking back to like me as a kid and my dad as a teenager or whatever, how, because this is such a strong line of this one thing that bonds your three generations now, how much of that do you find yourself doing? Like thinking, oh, this was me and my dad was watching me, or I wonder, you know, if this is a thought going through Nico's head at all, or if he's going to have to wait until he's 30 until it's hitting.
I think maybe like watching him play, I think of my dad and like him having to kind of keep his cool, you know, like breathe, just breathe.
Yeah.
But, so I see that, but, I think with me, playing compared to my dad was covering the players,
right,
and now me coaching compared to like what my dad was doing, even though it's just a unique, like you said, lineage of, it's not the same as like father son player,
right.
It's kind of allowed, Nico to have a little bit of, different access and a little bit of a different experience, compared to what I was able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Although I was afforded a lot, it wasn't quite at the same level as maybe hanging out with an Aaron Boone or Brett Boone or Tim DeCinse. And seeing what they got to do compared to what I did. And, you know, Nico's kind of been afforded to do a little bit more than probably what I was able to do and experience a few more things, but not that I feel slighted or denied. But
right. All right. Well, I think we've basically run the gamut. So thank you very much for joining, taking some time out. Thank you to your family for letting me come in here. Is there anything that you, I always give people the opportunity to have people connect to them somewhere, but you're not much of a social media guru, right?
No, I'm not. Sorry.
Can we say, that's okay. That's, can we say that this episode is sponsored by Letco Jewelry?
Oh, without a doubt.
There's a massive laughter from the living room. Can the creator of Letco Jewelry come and throw out a quick 10-second spot? Yeah, come and...
Letco Jewelry. Fine hand again.
Okay, so we are going to have Karen Newhan, David's wife.
So like in the 40s in Rhode Island, maybe in the 30s or 40s, my grandfather owned and owned a jewelry store and manufacturing company, and my dad grew up in that business. Maybe about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago when he did pictures for me, my dad and I started started doing a little bit of jewelry. Well, since then, my dad's really gotten involved and we do a lot of handmade custom order pieces. My dad does a lot of wire wrapping. He can set stones. I do mostly bracelets, like make different beaded bracelets. That's more what I like to do. But we shape stones and rocks, cabochons, wire wrap rings, everything. I'm on Instagram at Letco Jewelry.
All right, cool. Well, you guys should check out Letco Jewelry. This will be going on after Christmas, so for your
Valentine's
Day needs, go to Letco Jewelry and get something for your sweetie there. Do people still say that?
Sweetie.
Yeah, there you go. You Thank now you. Sponsored your first podcast. Aww. So I'll just send you a contract.
Thank you.
Sure.
Letco Jewelry.
Yeah.
For all of your jewelry needs.
Is that your guys like, or are you just making that
up? I got nothing. I'm not catchy. I make really cool bracelets. That's my thing.
There you go. Letco Jewelry. We make really cool bracelets and that's our thing. And we're only on Instagram. All right. Well, again, thank you for having me in your home. To the entire Newhan family, Letco Jewelry, and to David Newhan, thank you very much.
Thank you. It was our pleasure. Had a blast.
Okay, and that ends my conversation with David Newhan. I hope you guys got a lot out of that conversation. I will say, as I was sitting there, and I knew the story about David's accident, and as I sat there with him, I was just getting the chills while he was retelling that story. And as I was editing this episode together as well and re-listening to it again, same effect. Like, it's so incredible, that story and what he pushed on to do. And it's really, really inspiring. So I count myself very fortunate to know David and to be able to have conversations with him about that. And I'm really very happy to be able to have this ability to get that story out there to more people. So I'm glad you are here to listen to it. Pass that on to some friends that you think would benefit from this story, whether they're dads or whether they're not, whether they're men or women. Like, I think that this story is an inspirational one to all people. So you can let your friends and family members know about that. You can also direct them to Daddy Unscripted on social media, at Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, all as Daddy Unscripted. You or they can send me an email at daddyunscripted@gmail.com. You can also go and visit the website, daddyunscripted.com. And along with David's post there, there will be some more photos of him and a little bit more of this story and the tie-in again to the episodes with his dad, Ross Newhan. which is also extremely important and good listening and helps tie all of this together in a nice little bow. So I appreciate you guys listening to that and for continuing to send me some good ideas for guests. I am very hopeful for the rest of this year to have some a lot more inspirational guests on as well in this vein to continue to not only document the important stories of these men and these dads and about their fathers, but also to inspire others as well. So hopefully we'll be able to do a lot more of that this year. I would also like to remind you guys about Osiris Podcasts and all of the different great podcasts on the Osiris Network. So I will tell you, there is one called The Brokedown Podcast, which is hosted by Jonathan, who was on my podcast a while ago, as well as a guest. So you can check out those episodes to learn more about the host. But you should check out Brokedown Podcast. You can find them at Brokedown Pod on Twitter. And they are up near 40 episodes or so. And he not only plays some great music by the Grateful Dead on his podcast, but he also has some fantastic guests that he talks about different stages of their career. And it just really is a really cool podcast that you guys, I'm sure a lot of you will really enjoy if you like the Grateful Dead, like I do. So again, check out Brokedown Pod. In the meantime, I will thank Humphreys McGee, as always, for letting me use their music on the podcast, the band, management, everybody. I love you guys. Check out Humphreys.com. You will love them as well. Go see them live. Check them out. You can, before you go in person to potentially have your face melted by their music, you can check them out online. Go to Humphreys.com. And, you know, I can't say enough good things about Humphreys McGee. I really can't. So I greeted you in Japanese, and unfortunately, the little thing that I use to find my languages did not have a Japanese farewell that I really loved. But in true Humphreys McGee fashion, I did learn, and I never knew this. If I was to say it was pleased to meet you, I would say Hajimemeshite, which is, if you spell it out, Hajimemeshite, which is one of my favorite Humphreys McGee songs, and I never realized that because I just never looked it up. But Hajimemeshite, which I'm saying very poorly, but it has been a pleasure to meet all of you. I hope that we meet again with the next episode. Keep your eyes out for that. It should be 2 or 3 weeks before that's out. So thanks again, you guys.